Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Sports City. It's your boy TP Thomas back at the helm. After an extraordinary All-Star weekend, we are back into the mix of things. The second half of the NBA season is here. We got a lot of stuff to jump into. Trade deadline coming around. A lot of big and interesting names to throw around this kitchen. I'm feeling the type of way. Y'all already know me. Russ brought it back to OKC 2 years in a row. Now, I ain't going to talk about Russ like that. Now, I'm playing. I'm going to talk about Russ. It don't matter, man. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside. The kitchen timeless is alive. Sports City, welcome to the wrap-up.
Somebody got a problem with hoes. What's up, y'all niggas all fed up? Cause I got a little cheddar and my record's moving out the store. Young fuckers picking at me, young rappers getting at me. My nigga Big predicted this shit exactly. More money, more problems, gotta move carefully. Cause faggots hate when you getting money like athletes. Young as ice grilling me, oh, you not feeling me? Fine, it cost you nothing, pay me no mind. Look, I'm on my grind, cousin, ain't got time for frontin'. Sensitive thugs, y'all all need hugs. Damn, low mans, I'm just trying to do me. If the record's 2 mil, I'm just trying to move 3. Get a couple chicks, get them to try to do E. Hopefully they're Menards before I reach my garage. I don't want much, fuck, I drove every car. Some nice cooked food, some nice clean drugs. Bird ass niggas, I don't mean to ruffle y'all. I know you waking in the wing, but I'm doing my thing. Where's the love?
The caller number is 917-889-9592. You got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you are here with the chefs. Happy President's Day to everybody out here in the United States of America. Thank you to everybody that's been checking us out, downloading the show, putting the word out there, spreading the word to everybody, to tell a friend, to tell a friend. You already know the slogan, man. I'm happy after this All-Star Weekend because a lot of people were talking junk about this All-Star Weekend. I mean, outside of the skills competition, you know, you got the dunk contest, and a lot of people saying that the dunk contest has lost its luster. The three-point competition, as I said, I got older. I built up a bigger respect for a jump shooter, and people sitting out there mastering their craft and knowing how Clay and Steph went at it again to bring it back to, you know, Golden State or whatever. Then you have the All-Star game, and this is Kobe Bryant's 18th, I want to say, nomination, because the past two seasons he has not played before this one because he was out due to injury. But knowing that he's been a part of this weekend for the past 18 years says a lot about the player, the competitive nature behind Kobe Bryant. I mean, I could talk about the good that he brings to the sport for hours. And I think the way that I'm acting is because I'm still a little bitter of how he plays on the floor all of his career. But I definitely have to pay homage and respect to what he brought to the game of basketball. And, of course, the Western Conference All-Stars took care of business up against the Eastern Conference All-Star and beat them handedly, winning by 23 points and nearly scoring 200. Like, this is the highest-scoring All-Star game ever. And knowing that they were two buckets away from 200 says a lot about how there was no defense being played and how these guys had a handful of scorers. Now, you know, I'm going to briefly get into a lot of this All-Star game and try to tag about, you know, the trade deadline and a lot of the interesting names before everybody gets here, sitting here to wrap up by myself. But that's cool, because I want to rattle off a lot of the stuff in which the All-Star game took place in Toronto, as everybody knows. Kobe Bryant's last showing, you had, okay, let me go across the board. You had Paul George go off for 41 points, tying Russell Westbrook's scoring output of 41 as well. The Western All-Stars were trying their best not to see Paul George eclipse the 42 mark because that's being held by Wilt Chamberlain, if I'm not mistaken, and they held him at 41. I don't know if it was a situation they didn't want him to break Russ's situation or be the high scorer in a night where they basically dominated the Eastern Conference. They did all that they could. Paul George was extremely hot from three-point land. He was 9 of 19 shooting. I think if the Eastern Conference would have won, it would have been no doubt that Paul George would have been bringing a trophy home. But this is where it actually gets interesting on the Western side of the ball. You had Anthony Davis, who had an interesting game. He had 24-6, no blocks, though, but that would have been another stat that he could have probably filled up. Chris Paul had a 14-16 game, 14 points and 16 assists. You also had James Harden, who also went off with 23. Steph Curry had a 26-6-5 night, also with four steals as well. KD had a 23-point night, and Kawhi, in his first All-Star game, had a 17-point night, shooting over 50% as well, too. But the MVP of the All-Star game, Russell Westbrook again, from last year, where he scored 41 points, comes into this one and scores 31, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 steals. The highest scoring total in back-to-back All-Star games ever. There's never been a player in the NBA history that had back-to-back showings of scoring 72 points. Russ did it in two games, so 41-31. This matchup shooting over 50% from the field, 7-17 from the three-point line. But when I was looking at it, I was like, you know, knowing how a lot of the nature comes around these MVPs in the All-Star game, it comes from scoring total. Who goes out there and throws up a lot of points and they end up getting MVP? And the way that Russ was scoring, I thought that that's all he was attacking. He's trying to attack the score, keep up with, you know, at least Paul George or Anthony Davis to try and output the try and outdo their output. But he still had an interesting line. He had 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 steals as well. So, I mean, he was out there doing a lot of what he could out there. But knowing that the All-Star game was dominated by the Western Conference, especially after the half where they were up by 2, which they actually faced a 3-point deficit after the first quarter. But after that, the Eastern Conference didn't see the daylight after that. But Kobe leaves the game with a 10-point scoring total, 7 assists, 6 rebounds. A lot of it swirled around Kobe and seeing him go off in his last All-Star appearance. This is his 18th nomination or appearance, if you will, because like I said before, he missed the last two due to injury. And you could tell the way that Magic Johnson brought him out. He started getting emotional, but I could tell he tried to cut that off quick before it got any crazier out there on the floor. Nobody really wants to see that before the game. Well, not saying me, because it's respectable. Whatever he's going to go out there and do, he's going to do. But I think he wanted to have a good time, have fun, and make it an enjoyable night instead of, you know, being stuck inside his head, which they did. They went out there and had fun. But I'm going to say the All-Star weekend looked good. The only thing about the All-Star game, which I'm getting a lot of backlash from a lot of people that I know, is, you know, back in the day, there was the quote to, like, people that went to, you know, shops to eat or stuff or sandwiches saying, where's the beef? Well, where was the defense? There was no defense being played. It was alley-oops like crazy, three-point shots being thrown up or what have you. And I think a lot of people come out there to see a scoring output, and especially when it comes to the fourth quarter where they're trying to get stops. But the West was so far ahead, they couldn't stop. And plus, at one point, I think it was the start of the fourth quarter, the Western Conference just threw up a barrage of three, whether it was Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, Steph Curry, everybody was hot from the three-point line, and they just put the Eastern Conference behind the eight ball, if you will. So just looking at how things did go down in that All-Star game was an epic situation for me to see. And people that know me was, you know, hitting me up during the game like, oh, Ty, you just like to see Russ do a thing. I'm like, I can't help it if Russ gonna go out there to do a thing. It's not like I'm sitting up here texting Russ or hitting him up for the game. And you know, you got people in Sports City that talk junk to me about Russ before the game, and then after the game, they don't want to talk to me. But they said they'll be here, so hopefully they'll be getting here soon. But like I said, 196 to 173, the West brings it back to the Western Conference. So this all goes into, you know, how things are being represented in the NBA Finals, home court advantage, so on and so forth. But looking at a lot of the interesting names, it was, you know, even though the West did dominate and winning by 20-plus points, it was a good game. If it were more defense, it would have been a great situation. But I don't think people want to, you know, see a low-scoring total, seeing like a 117 to 112 game. They came out there to see all of their guys go out there and do work. They came to see them all do work. So let me move from that, because we are now at the trade deadline. I wanted to get through that quickly until I started to see faces in the kitchen. Okay, so we do have people in the kitchen as well. Press 1 if you want to get in here, do your thing. If not, I'm knowing that you're listening. We got a lot of situations around this President's Day. College basketball taking off this week. But like I said, the trade deadline, there's a lot of big names that they have thrown into this situation. First and foremost, the first trade that I do want to talk about is the Blake Griffin to Denver situation, where not Blake, but Denver turned it down. Now, it's funny because I'm not going to lie, competitive nature me, I'm an Oklahoma City guy, but knowing the capacity of this guy, knowing that Oklahoma City has a rivalry with the Clippers, I know Blake Griffin is a superstar. I know. I'm not going to sit here and excuse that situation. I know he's a superstar. I'm not going to call him star. He's a superstar. He's a 20 and 10 type of guy, and he's young. Blake Griffin is 26, going to be 27 next month, if I'm not mistaken, in March. So, I mean, he's getting up there, but he's not old. I mean, he's still young. 6'9", 260, built like a complete ox. That's why it's hard for people to deal with him, because he's cut like a damn sculpture. But knowing, this is interesting, knowing Blake has an injury history, I don't even want to really look at it as him being injury prone, but you have to kind of throw that to it. The name that they tried to throw out there for Blake Griffin to go to Denver and having Denver unload players to the Clippers, it would have been Gallo and Fareed, if I'm not mistaken, for Blake. And Denver said no. Now, I understand to the capacity that Gallinari is an excellent shooter. Fareed and Blake kind of X each other out because, to me, both of these guys are offensive guys. Fareed is not a great defender. He may block a shot here and there, but defensively people, you know, get their will or way on him. Same for Blake. You'll get some block shots here and there because he's a high flyer. But Blake is waiting to see the ball go the other way. And I don't really say he totally looks for a lob or he's waiting to bury his shoulder into somebody's chest, because Blake has developed a little jumper, also a bank shot away from the rim as well, too. So those things are there for Blake. But knowing that Denver is in the cellar and have to try and, you know, sky or catapult from somewhere, they turned down the Blake Griffin situation. So it's all too interesting for me to where I'm thinking, do they see a tomorrow in Gallo and company and Fareed, or is this something that they rather not get involved with, dealing with Blake, knowing that he has a history right now, he has a broken hand, fighting with the equipment manager? I mean, there are so many looming situations around Blake Griffin. Is this really a red light or a signal that they didn't want to touch Blake, or is this just a situation that they're trying to be loyal and stick with the guns that they do have with Gallinari and Kenneth Fareed? So that actually intrigued me a ton. Also, okay, so I do have a caller. I'll get to the other topic before I get there. Calling out of Arizona, I do have Mr. Silva in the building. Welcome to the Wrap Up. How are you feeling this evening?
You know, I'm feeling real good. If I want to go, I'll hop right into this. The Blake Griffin situation, it is quite interesting to me because whenever you see a trade like this, a trade, especially when it's multiple players for one, or you're getting multiple things for just one player, you have to look at the all-around bats and what you're going to get and what you're going to give away. What you get and what you're going to give away. And I think, you know, for all intents and purposes, the trade would have been bad. I don't think the trade would have. I don't think the trade would have been sufficient for Denver. Now, like you said, we're not going to front on Blake Griffin and his off the court antics this season and what have you. He's still a player. He's an all star. Like you said, 20 and 10 guy. He's going to put boards. He's going to get you some boards. He's going to, you know, get you some points. He's going to be productive. Like you said, he has developed a short range jumper and yellow off the bank shot. But when you're talking about a Fareed and a Gallinari, two players that, like you said, they're not gonna, you know, they didn't break the mold when they made those players, so to speak. But I think the production that you'll get out of those two is more combined than what you would get with the Blake Griffin. Not only that, coupling that with a guy that's still injured, a guy that's got to come back and face a suspension, And not for nothing, he started his entire NBA career missing in his first rookie season due to injury. And then he came back and he got injured. And then he came back and he got injured. And the only thing that I think for Blake Griffin that has helped him out is the fact that when he is on the court, he is efficient. He is an all-star player. He can get those 20s and for you on any given night. He pushes. He can get you a triple double if you need him to. You know what I'm saying? If push came to shove and all the cards on the table, I think he could. So, he's a good player. But making it for those two, I just think the production that Denver was getting from them. The fact that they are still on the court, the fact that they're not dealing with suspensions and dealing with injuries and things of that nature, I think that's one of the main reasons why. Now, again, we don't know if the Clippers could have added any other leverage, another player, some picks or something. I mean, maybe, sweeten the deal for Denver. Maybe the Clippers might have been able to swing the deal. But, again, when you're going to give multiple, whether it be players, picks, or money, multiple things, and it's for one player, it better be, a wealth of riches that you're going to get one player. And I just don't see that with Blake.
Now, here's the question I have toward that or the roundabout situation to it. Gallinari has an injury history. Like, he has a resume of being injured. And also the situation around Kenneth Faried. Now, Kenneth Faried, fresh out of the box, out of Morehead State, everybody knew he was a high-energy guy. He was a double-double guy, ran the floor, and it still presents itself till today in the NBA that he gets up and down the floor, he gets his rebounds, offensive rebounds or defensive rebounds, but a high-energy guy. Now, comparing these two players to Blake, I think both of those guys compared to Blake. Like, you could wrap those two players up into Blake. The one thing that I do miss about the situation on the player that they try to wrap up into the situation with Gallinari in it is, how many shooters do you want in L.A.?
Mm-hmm.
How many shooters? You got Paul Pierce shooting the ball, Chris Paul that can shoot the ball, Jamal Crawford is not going anywhere. They also try to wrap up Lance Stephenson to send him somewhere also. So that's interesting, too, knowing that they still have Lance Stephenson on the bench. J.J. Redick, that's another shooter as well. Austin Rivers, Doc's son, is a notable shooter. I mean, he's not a slasher, but he can get up and dunk if he needs to. But, I mean, come on, how many shooters do you want? And I think, let alone, Faried is a high-energy guy, gets up and down the floor, but that's what DeAndre does. So you're going to have both of these guys going after the ball up and down the floor, and it's kind of like a good fit with Blake and DeAndre, because Blake can actually sit outside and watch DeAndre cause havoc down there, catch a lob if need be, or vice versa. But, I mean, it's not like DeAndre's going to go out there and step out and shoot a jumper, because nobody wants to see DeAndre shoot anything, like free throws or jump shots. But still, I think it kind of crowds or questions the situation that the Clippers are trying to do, at least offensively. I think they need to work on a defensive presence to make that type of move. But at the end of the day, I know that, one, Blake Griffin would not want to go to Denver after leaving Los Angeles. I mean, as of right now, winter is closing out. They're going to be coming into the spring and summer season. I don't think that's a likable situation for a guy like Blake, who's from Oklahoma, made the transition of, going to Los Angeles and being a big market name and big venue guy, to going to Denver and having to go to a smaller team. I don't really want to call Denver a small market, because they do support their sport teams, but compared to Los Angeles and the bright lights on and so forth, it takes away from a guy like Blake Griffin. So I know that's something that he wouldn't be interested in, but if the teams are already talking about it, where there is smoke, there is fire. And the one thing that actually baffles me, even though he's had his injury history, even though he had one of the more questionable thoughts or ideas I could think of him fighting the equipment manager. I just don't get that. Why would he fight the equipment manager? But it's like, why are they trying to unload him right now? Like, are they done with the Blake Griffin show? Like, is it enough is enough around Blake? So I'm not going to lie, he's from Oklahoma City. If we could give up, Kyle Fengler or somebody, hey, send him back home. You could send him right back home. I'll give y'all Kyle Fengler if you want to shoot it. Look, I'm always trying to deal somebody from OKC, but we've been fine with Kyle Singler. Kyle Singler's been actually been playing ball. Like the way I used to try and deal Kendrick Perkins, like I used to be like, take Kendrick. You can take him. I'll be hurt because Kyle Singler's actually built himself up. But I'm just throwing that out there to be funny. But other than that, I mean, there may be other teams that may step into the reality of the situation to try and go after Blake if they are interested. And then if so, it's a wowing situation because they'd have to, you know, get this learned on the fly, whoever comes in there. And I look at this situation knowing how loaded the Western Conference is. This has to be a quick learner, especially at the four position where he has to build, you know, chemistry between him and DeAndre and not get frustrated because they're going to foul DeAndre just so he could prove that he could hit free throws. You know what I'm saying? So that's something that they all have to be patient on. But anything else around the Blake Griffin situation before I move on?
Yeah, real quickly, I know you said you touched on the fact that you said you're moving from L.A. to Denver. Again, Denver is a small market team, but it is one of those teams like, and nowhere near am I talking about the winning, but like a San Antonio, like an NFL, a Green Bay, a small market team that really just loves their team. They don't have the big publicity. They don't, you know, you don't have millions of cameras in your face. Obviously, you're not, you're in the NBA, you're not cameras in your face, but you know the comparison from Denver to LA is a wide range more in LA. So you're right. So I don't know. Maybe sometimes you know when you go from a market like in LA to say a Denver, where the fan base really just loves you, where the media is not trying to, you know, make everything you do about as bad as possible. It may help someone out. So on that note, on that aspect, I see what you're saying. He may not want to, you know, who wants to leave LA for Denver? You know, any 26-year-old kid with millions of dollars, obviously, you're not going to want to leave LA for Denver. But personally, I think with the offensive court issues and the way he handles himself, maybe being out of the media limelight, so to speak, and of course, he's Blake Griffin, is going to follow him to Denver, but it's not going to be as big as it was in LA. So I think maybe that might help him, you know, on the off chance, you know, when he's on the off field, off the court, maybe he thinks twice or, you know, who knows. But sometimes going from a market that maybe has a big fan base that loves you and the media trying to kill you, you go to a market where the fan base is quite similar, big, loves you, will buy your jersey, but the media isn't so hard on you. We talk about that a lot with New York as well. Going to New York, the media is going to kill you. Of course, you're going to love the nightlife, the way that, you know, half the fans speak it. But I do think Denver might have been personally a good move for him. Again, you know, no kid, no guy, 26-year-old making millions wants to leave L.A. for Denver. On another note, you were talking about the trade in and of itself. And now that it's a no, you know, would another team pull the trigger? Would another team come in? The script is now there, obviously. We've got what for Blake now. You know, comparatively speaking, a Gallinari and a Fareed. Obviously, you know, that is now the blueprint. That is what they want. So any plethora of teams, not Eastern and not specifically Western, any one of them, you know, can now have a rough draft, so to speak, of what the Clippers want for Blake. That makes it a little easier, in my opinion, for teams that do want him to make an offer that they'll actually go with. So I think this only helps the non-Clippers moving forward. Now all the other teams kind of know their hand and know kind of what they want, because like you said, this was offered by LA and turned down by Denver. So this is what LA wants. So I really think that may make the offers shrink a little as well, but make some actual strong offers for a team that knows that they want Blake Griffin and can afford to give up whatever LA wants, which is, you know, what we've seen that they wanted from Denver.
And this is interesting because whatever team needs to make this move, I think, one, they have to be ready for a power forward that the strong presence is they need scoring at that position. They can't have Blake going in there being a role player, being like a 16-9 guy. I mean, the rebound presence is there for Blake because he gets off the floor, whether it's offensive or defensive. He'll be able to get off the floor and get rebounds. But knowing how much he was being able to contribute and how much he worked on his game to try and score the ball more, it'll be interesting to see if he goes to another team and they diminish his role and want him to be more of a role player than a scoring output kind of guy. So knowing Denver turned away from him, if that is still there, I wonder what team does jump the gun and either looks at Blake to be one of the guys of the team or more or less looks at it like, well, come in here, understand the system, and if your situations are there, whether it's an alley that we could give you or a spin move that you can spin off of a guy and get to the rim or knocking down a shot here or there, so be it. But I think that's solely what these two teams will have to look at, being the Clippers losing Blake and also the team that will actually be ending up receiving him if that is what presents itself. But it's interesting that they're doing this right now, the trade deadline. So I think that the Clippers organization might have washed their hands with the Blake Griffin situation. The next blockbuster or big-name situation in the game that I want to throw out there is the Houston Rockets and the Miami Heat are in talks of trading center for center, being Dwight Howard from Houston going to Miami for Hassan Whiteside. Now, it's interesting because it's like the H's. I'm looking at it in the letter H because you got Hassan and Whiteside. Of course, you got Dwight Howard and also James Harden in this situation. Now, I didn't know how severe the situation was until I read more into the situation and really started to learn more of the facts of what's going on. I now know that the Houston Rockets are not only not happy with, Dwight's inconsistency of him not playing on the floor, but him and James Harden have a divide or something that's splitting these guys up where these guys do not like playing with each other. So this is interesting to me. You sign a guy like Dwight to a four-year, $88 million deal where you're promising him $22 per. Well, actually, I think in the upcoming season, they broke the payment down, he's expected $23 million next year because I think this is the end of the contract on how this may end up going down. But so James Harden and Howard had a spat, and this was something that other analysts and people that spoke on it, they said to the eye, the people that are watching the games, so on and so forth, it looks like these guys get along, but, you know, behind the scenes, they don't get along. Every time Dwight is on the floor, Harden trying to score the ball, but he's trying to keep Dwight involved while the rest of the team is up there playing video game basketball, watching these guys do their thing, and it being more of the two guard that can distribute playing ball with Dwight Howard while the rest of the Rocket team actually is happy. Hey, listen to this. Actually is happy while Dwight is not on the floor because Harden tries to get everybody involved and play more of a team game. So this is actually interesting because I'm going to be honest, I don't like Dwight because he's on other teams, but if Dwight were on my team, I would actually like it because what he presents to the game, he's a 20-10 guy if he puts his mind to it, and he also can contest shots. I'm not going to call him the best of shot blockers, but if you leave a floater or a layup there, he'll block that. But I wouldn't want to just see him leave my team for nothing, you know what I'm saying? But here's the interesting situation. They were already talking about potentially moving Harden. But you have to think about it, and is that a smart move to watch Harden go elsewhere? Who is more valuable to you at this time where Dwight is the older of the two players, where you could actually send him elsewhere and somebody will pick up the center? You just can't teach 6'11 and 7 feet at 265, and his shoulders could barely fit in a doggone TV screen. I can care less if you had a 55-inch. You're worried about Dwight and his presence in the paint. So this is interesting. Now, the Hassan Whiteside center situation is interesting to me also. You mean to tell me that you have a personality in Dwight Howard that you're trying to get rid of because it may just offset people? We always have that smiling demeanor that it pisses off a lot of people, and I think he more or less just goes out there and tries to joke through every situation to get through it, whether the refs aren't giving him calls, he's getting in the spats with players trying to stay away from technical fouls. I understand his style of play, just to get through the process of games, so on and so forth. But now, you have that in Dwight Howard, which you're trying to unload. You're looking to Hassan Whiteside, a 2 or 3 year guy that's been in the league that has his issues even up until this current day right now. He even had a situation where he threw an elbow blatantly at somebody, got removed from a game, so on and so forth. I don't get which way they're trying to go with it. Are they really just done with Dwight Howard and don't want to deal with this situation? pick up a guy like Hassan Whiteside who can get you 10 blocks. That's the thing about Whiteside that I respect. He is a shot blocker and known for doing that. Can settle with watching James Harden do his thing and, you know, guys like Josh Smith, Terrence Jones, I mean, the list goes on and on. Or, you know, he doesn't really have that, you know, potency in the postseason where you had that from a guy like Dwight Howard as well, from all of the teams that he's been on. But they actually threw out an interesting stat, too. In the past four seasons, Dwight, if he moves this season, it'll be his fourth team. Think about it. If he does end up moving this season, from wherever he goes, if it potentially happens this season, Houston, L.A., and Orlando. That all happened in a matter of four seasons. Is there really a strong lying situation around Dwight Howard? And it's like, okay, so who really wants him? Also with the Hassan Whiteside, can they really cause reform with this guy with no Kevin McHale, and you have an interim coach and Bickerstaff who will not be there at the end of the season? So all of this will be a big transition, if you will. But, Nacho, your situation on this, being Hassan Whiteside potentially being the name that is being thrown into the pot with Dwight Howard.
You know, real quick, it is interesting that you brought up the L.A. thing, because we could have been sitting here watching Chris Paul and Dwight Howard, you know, ride with Kobe on his last ride, but that's neither here nor there. That's just something that we could have been seeing that's interesting, you know, to think about because of Dwight Howard. I mean, you think about, like you said, the Orlando, the L.A., the Houston, you know, the injuries, the rumors, the swirling. Can they coexist, him and Harden? They can't. They can. And they end up going all the way, whether it's the Western Conference Finals or, you know, right there, knocking on the door. And just, it doesn't seem to work out for them at all. You know, to me, the trade, again, I'm not a huge, you know, I love basketball, but to know every team and all the players is hard. And to know someone like Hassan Whiteside, I just don't know very much about the guy. I know his name. Obviously, it's an abstract name, so you hear it, you cling on to it, but I don't know very much about him. That being said, that tells you everything that you need to know about Houston right now and their feelings towards Dwight Howard. We're willing to trade you not only a hot commodity as it pertains to, like you said, could be a 20-10 every night on the court. He's going to sell jerseys. He's going to do some commercials. He's going to be there to sign things. You're losing a lot more than just a 20-10 on the court when you talk about moving Dwight Howard, and you're going to bring in someone that does nothing for you off the court. Off the court, he does nothing. You're not going to sell an influx of Whiteside or White Sour. I don't even, I forgot his last name already. You're not going to sell those jerseys at an extraordinary amount that you're selling Howard's. You're not going to get, you know, people to come to the games because you put Hassan in a commercial. You're not going to. So when you do this, when you make a trade, or you're talking about a trade like this, to me means they want nothing to do with Dwight Howard, and the person with the fast trigger and at minimum what they want in Houston will get rid of him. Like you said, the fact that they're sitting there as a team and are happy and are cohesive, consistent, together as a team when Howard's not there, it speaks volumes to that team and how they feel about that player. Now, again, that does not denigrate Dwight Howard's on-the-court presence. It does not denigrate Dwight Howard, and like you said, what he can do for you on the court. It means for whatever reason, this team, you know, we don't want to use emotion in a sport like for men, but emotionally, in their minds, this is something that they don't like. They don't like Dwight Howard. They don't like the way that Chris Paul plays when Dwight Howard's on the way James Harden plays when Dwight Howard's on the court. They don't like the way he just, you know, is trying to get Dwight Howard involved and no one else. And you know, I think it really gets to an organization, and they can see that. They can sense that. Now, again, you made it pretty clear, and I think it's actually been something to me that I have applauded from Dwight Howard and James Harden, the fact that we don't know that. We don't see that. Now, we could guess that, and now that we've got proof by these reports and things of that nature. But before that, we, like you said, we couldn't tell there was a rift through the team. We couldn't sit here and tell that the team didn't like playing with Dwight Howard. The team, James Harden and Dwight Howard, in front of the cameras, carried themselves so well that we as a media, we as a fan of the sport, couldn't tell there was a rift. So for me, looking on the situation, you know, there's something that should be, you know, that should be taken account for. These players, the ones on the bench, the ones starting along with Dwight Howard and James Harden, they've all handled themselves very well throughout this ordeal. So that's one thing that I would like to commend them. But on the other hand, what Houston is saying by wanting to make this trade screams get him out of here as soon as possible. Screams we're tired of the hack of Howard. Screams we're tired of the way that this team is being hindered by Dwight Howard. So I think, to honestly, if Miami pulls the trigger, that'll get done. But to me, this screams that Dwight Howard will not be in a Houston Rockets jersey by the end of the trade deadline. I do anticipate him moving, whether it be to Miami or another team. This tells me right here, because of who they want to trade him for, they'll take almost anything.
Now, looking at this situation from one side of the spectrum, which is the Houston side, which we just talked about, let's look at the Heat side of this perspective. You know what I'm saying? You have a young guy in Hassan Whiteside who is actually giving you several triple-doubles while blocking shots. Now, Dwight is a guy that, like I said, can contest shots. He can block a shot here and there. You're willing to watch a young guy in Hassan Whiteside now walk away and go to Houston and develop more, right? That's one. Two, I understand and get it that if they do bring Dwight Howard there, that this is his last hurrah. And while I say the last hurrah for Dwight Howard, this will be the last time that he goes somewhere with the potential all-star, superstar-quality guy around him in Dwayne Wade, that he could try and make a possible run at an NBA championship or Eastern Conference final, if that's as far as these guys can get. Knowing that championship ways have been built within this organization with Spoelstra, with Pat Riley, you know, there's a few notable names that you could think of that are still on the team that have actually been to the NBA finals with LeBron and such that can get them there. But if he, this is what I don't get. This is what bothers me. Outside of Orlando, right? He didn't really have a problem in Orlando, even though him and Ben Gundy had their little spat in that last little month or two before he left Orlando. But that's just, I think that's more or less of the expectancy that the coach wants out of his player. But outside of that, he goes to L.A. Him and Kobe don't get along. He leaves L.A. He goes to Houston. Now him and Harden don't get along. You mean to tell me that you're already getting ready to get rid of Hassan Whiteside to watch him leave to bring Dwight Howard in there, and picture if him and Dwayne Wade don't get along, and these are the last seasons of Dwayne Wade. We thought we just seen Kobe walk away from the All-Star game and looking like he's on his last leg, even though Kobe's had some games in the last couple of weeks or so where he's put up some interesting numbers. I'm going to be honest, and I hate to call him out like this. I really do. Dwayne Wade has like 3 or 4 seasons left in him. That's it. That's it. I'm talking about a high-quality two-guard ball, two or three seasons left in him. Dwayne Wade just turned 34. He just turned 34. I think he's going to walk away from the game same age as Kobe, 37 years old. 37 years old. We don't want to see Flash, and he's no longer Flash like from what we see, but, I mean, that's his nickname. But we don't want to see Flash walk away from the game and look like how Kobe is right now. Like it's already bad that we have to see Kobe look like this, and this is because Kobe, honestly, looks like this due to injury. It's not because Kobe really got old in front of us. Kobe had a broken leg, a rotator cuff situation. I mean, Achilles. He also had a torn Achilles, too. So, like, his body broke down, knowing that he put a lot of mileage on that body. Dwayne Wade has gotten his championships, and he still looks like he's slowing down. So you're going to want to put him in a situation where you already got interesting players, and you got Justice Winslow that you picked up from Duke, quality player. You also got Dragic there as well that they got from Phoenix. I don't know what Phoenix was thinking, but now look at the fire that's going on down there in Phoenix. So they got him there. Then you bring Dwight Howard. Picture the rest of the organization not being happy with what Dwight presents. You're already getting a guy that shoots under 65% free throw shooting. Under. When Hassan Whiteside shoots better free throws than him also. So is this something that Miami is prepared for? So this is the thought on the other side of the spectrum. If they do end up making this go down, the things that the Heat need to worry about. Your thoughts on this one, Nacho?
You know, the Heat side, to me, I didn't see anything wrong with it. I know, like you said, Hassan, he's definitely a better free throw shooter, but I think you talk about Dwight's size, you talk about the way Dwight can, you know, get you some points and things of that nature. I think that it could bode well for Miami. Now, like you said, the difference between the leader, well, you didn't say, but the difference between the leader and Dwayne Wade and James Harden are three rings on the hand of Dwayne Wade. And I think the fact that he has that, the fact that he's had big egos come to his town, and I'll call Miami Dwayne Wade town, you know, full effect. The fact that he's had Shaq come in, him and them two for 3 years, play some really good ball, win a championship. Then with Chris Bosh and now and LeBron James, when they did for their 4 year run and a couple championships, did, you know, Dwight Howard going in? It's one of those things that, hey, I think it could work really well for Miami. I think it could bode well. I think they have the leadership quality there that won't try to adhere to Dwight Howard, that won't, when he's on the court, try to feed him the ball more often than not. So I honestly think that, you know, it could be a good fit in there. I think the championship culture that they have over there in Miami, that really, you know, with one person leaving, I understand that they drop, but, you know, you can bring Dwight in, and I think it'll definitely be – I got to squeeze. Hold on one second. Oh, sorry about that. The concept of Dwight Howard and Dwayne Wade and that Miami Heat team, and like you said, Goran Dragic, they got some pieces down there still. I think that could bode well for them. So on the Miami side, I don't see it being a bad trade. Again, you are going to lose the age. You are going to have to go try and find someone here within the next 4 years. But again, you're talking about Dwayne Wade having 3 years left. You get Dwight Howard at the last few years. And you can get this team with Dragic and the rest of those boys. I think you can put a contender together. Again, in the East that is so weak, you're only going to have to deal with the LeBron James and whatever team he's on. You can make a run for it. Maybe you catch them at their weakest and or whatever. Maybe you are just a better team overall than whatever team LeBron's on, which would be Cleveland this year. So you never know at that point. So I honestly think, conversely, for Miami, it's a good trade. But for the Houston, I don't know if it's a bad trade. Again, I just think that they're really trying to get rid of him at all costs necessary. And again, the Whiteside guy, again, I just don't know him to have followed him multiple times. Reading up on him a little bit in his game, of course you're going to get a young kid. Like you said, he can block some shots. If he works on his game a little bit more, and gets you some more points. But he's going to be a guy that can be productive for Houston. And then again, you get the upside of, you don't have the hack of Howard anymore in Houston to worry about that. And, you know, it could be beneficial for both teams. But I think if this does go down, to me, Miami comes out the winner in the short term.
So in the short term, and how long of a window do you look at that as? That was the question I was going to ask. So you think Miami is the quick winner. How long of the short-term window? Is this a 2 to 4 year project that you think this ends up working out to them trying to be NBA final or Eastern Conference relevant? Because unless you see a bigger window set in front of Dwayne Wade.
I don't. I think you hit it. I could sit here and try and push for the guy for 5 to 6, maybe 7 years if they Tim Duncan him just right over the course of the next couple of years and he takes off just the amount of right of time and he gets saved for the playoffs, then by all means, yes. If he doesn't have an Achilles tear like Kobe, if he doesn't get, you know, have a very serious injury over the next year or two, then there's nothing wrong with me thinking that Dwayne Wade could play a possible 6 to 7 years more. But like you said, I believe what you said is 100% on. He's got 3 years left at high-quality Dwayne Wade basketball that we've been seeing, and I think that that is the time frame. If you get Dwight in now, you've got the rest of this year with three more, with Dwight and Dwayne playing at what they can do most right now. So I think the window's 3 years. And to me, and again, this is the East. You get hot at the right time. You know, Cleveland stumbles in the first round and they get knocked out in the second round. Who knows? And you could sneak into an Eastern Conference Finals and maybe get into an NBA Finals because that East is so wide open, especially if a Cleveland stumbles early and gets knocked out because of, you know, a bad game by LeBron, a couple bad games back-to-back by LeBron. Who knows? So, yes, I do believe you put Dwight Howard on that Miami team, maybe not this year, but next year they can be contenders. And, again, like I said, unless you're dealing with a LeBron and Miami Heat-style team, you know, the one were a couple of years ago, which I don't think you'll have in Cleveland, then, you know, you can definitely either think about beating them in a Series 7 or you know, they stumble and you might have to play someone else. And, of course, at that moment, it's wide open in the East.
Yeah, and that's what I look at, is that the time would actually be now if they're going to make Dwight come to the East and have him be successful. The last time LeBron has got knocked off in the Eastern Conference was up against Dwight Howard and the Orlando Magic back in 2009.
Mm.
So if you think about it, LeBron has been successful ever since Dwight's left. You know, like Dwight left, he went to L.A. and that happened there. The next thing you know, all of the years behind it when he got to Houston. So, I mean, if you get him there, he's with, you know, Dwayne Wade. They could probably contend up against Kyrie and company. Because to me, to be honest, there may be some interesting teams there. The Atlanta Hawks, the Boston Celtics, the Chicago Bulls. I really don't think anybody's there strong enough to knock off LeBron. I mean, LeBron owns the Eastern Conference right now. You get Dwight there, that's a different animal. I mean, you got Miles Goff that's going to have to deal with Dwight. I don't feel like that's a fair matchup. Even though Miles Goff may be 7 feet, I mean, he does not want a problem with Dwight. That's actually something that Miami can consider to try and stick it back to LeBron, if you will, for LeBron leaving them to go back home to Cleveland. That would be interesting to see that happen, especially with how Dwight and LeBron don't usually get along ever since their little spat 2 or 3 years ago as well. So that would be interesting in itself. But other than that, I find it hard to see anybody knocking these guys off. LeBron has been in the NBA Finals since 2010. He's won the Eastern Conference every year since 2010.
And again, you know, we could talk about the East and who can be the contender, but again, you bring Dwight Howard to that Miami team, you got a team now who knows a LeBron James. And again, this is definitely not the same kind of thing as when you talk about maybe an NFL game when you know tendencies on play calling and things of that nature, but they know LeBron James. You get him in a 7-game series, you know what irritates him, you know what he doesn't like, and yada, yada, yada. Again, I know there are multiple teams that do, but this team intimately does. But you get Dwight Howard on a Miami Heat team playing against a LeBron James team. Again, the last time he didn't make it, like you said, 09 with Orlando. He would have a better team than he did in Orlando with this Miami Heat team. And again, I think they could be a good. Again, it would take – again, I don't know if this year it would be, you know, like glue immediately and then boom, they're automatically in the Eastern Conference Finals against Cleveland and they're going to go at it and whoever wins, you know, plays with that Larry O'Brien. I don't think that at all this year. I think it could be a possibility. I think by all means, if they click on the right cylinders, yeah, we could see that. I'm thinking more you get it done this year and you get a half a year or the rest of the year continuity. They are going to make the playoffs, so you will get a chance to play a playoff team and see what this team can do in the playoffs. Maybe you win a round one series. Maybe you get into that second round and you get knocked off, but you know what you can do at least with 30 games in, 35 games into a season. Now you get the offseason in the next regular season to do what you set out to do in the middle of this one. So for right now, in the immediate, you know, next 4 months till the finals and the playoffs come, no, I don't think that this will change them around that soon. But next season, we're looking at a team that I think if they can get it right and gel together, again, they have to pull the trigger. Miami has to pull the trigger, and so does Houston, to make this happen. But if they both do, I think next year we're looking at a Miami, and if LeBron stays in Cleveland and that nature, we're looking at a Cleveland and maybe a Miami next year, talking about them two being the cream of the East, with maybe an Atlanta. They're dangling there at third. So that, to me, is a big enough trade that you pull the trigger. Again, it's up to Houston and whatnot, and if they really want to make that. But to me, Miami can make out like a bandit and try and put another O'Brien trophy in the case over the next 3 years.
Okay. Before I go to the next topic, is there anything that you would like to discuss before I move along?
No.
Okay. Speaking of Atlanta, since you bring up Atlanta, because I was going to transition right into it, I just didn't want to run to the end of the show and not have you, you know, have anything that you wanted to get off your chest. But now, there are interesting pieces that they throw out here for the Atlanta Hawks, two of which are all-star players. Even though one of them didn't make the all-star team this year, and Jeff Teague, they are in heavy talks of trying to remove Jeff Teague from the Atlanta Hawks, where he has been the mixing spoon for this team since he came out of college, out of Wake Forest. And now, this is the one that puzzles me the most. Al Horford, out of anybody on this doggone team, they're not saying that Atlanta is in the talks of trying to move Al Horford. There are talks of Al Horford trying to leave the organization because they feel that Atlanta doesn't have a window to make a chance at a NBA Finals and so forth. With the skills and the talent that this kid presents, it's best that he leaves Atlanta and tries to make it happen. So I understand it to that point, but knowing how loyal he's been to the organization, how the organization's been loyal to him, I'm puzzled on seeing this potentially happen. The Jeff Teague, Al Horford situation in Atlanta is a big deal. Wondering what team would probably try and soak up Jeff Teague at the point guard position, because a lot of these teams are already, you know, locked in at what they have at the point guard position. And knowing that if Jeff Teague goes somewhere, he's not a bench player. He's a guy that can go out and perform today. And also Al Horford. I mean, if I do look at it, how they're presenting it, I wholeheartedly understand it. Not to sit there and watch your career wash away and, you know, you go somewhere for the last five seasons and win one or two championships while, you know, you basically were so honest to a team, kind of, i.e., like when I was growing up, Clyde Drexler. Clyde Drexler spent his whole career in Portland trying to make it happen with the Trailblazers, and I don't blame him because he's been to so many different, you know, Western Conference Finals, having a bump into Magic Johnson, you know, and getting beat up by the Lakers, so on and so forth. They finally eclipsed it once Magic fell out of the league for his reasons, and as soon as Magic left, the Trailblazers made the finals, and then next thing you know, he bumps into a guy named Michael Jordan and still can't get over the hump, and then he gets traded to Houston, and he finally wins a championship with Hakeem Olajuwon. So, and this was at the end of his career. So your thoughts on Al Horford potentially trying to look to lead this team, and also Jeff Teague, if you have anything backing this situation as well.
You know, I read about this earlier, and I didn't really get too in-depth into it because the names just startled me like you. I couldn't imagine why you would want to get rid of Jeff Teague. Now, again, I didn't realize that it was Horford that was wanting out because of the window of wanting to win and things of that nature. So I think, to me, Atlanta, who knows, man? This is a team. What was it? What is it? 2 years removed from being a bottom dweller, skyrockets last year up to the top of the food chain in the Eastern Conference. Was it one throughout the entire year, and just they did things that they, you know, for most of the year they did things that we didn't expect them to do. And now this year, again, I think what are they, first or second, or they're second or third in the East now, and it's just I don't know. It really boggles my mind. Now, Jeff Teague, like you said, since he came out of college, he's been a cog in the Atlanta Hawks team that you just you recognize Teague in Atlanta. That just goes together. And it didn't seem to me that there would be any kind of movement. And it felt like there would be multiple, you know, contract signings between the two, and they would you know, move on, you know, perfectly, doing on perfectly, but as well as they can throughout his career. So to me, that is a big, I don't want to say red flag, but a big observation that is mind-boggling. Again, with Al Horford, I think that's more or less to do with him and his personal thoughts. When someone wants to leave a team, and it's a team like that, this isn't a team that is a perennial loser that's been at the bottom for the past 5 years, that hasn't been able to get things right. This isn't a quote-unquote Cleveland Browns of the NBA type of team. This isn't a team that has just been doing nothing. They were actually very well last year. They're playing very well this year. So when you hear someone say, I want out, to me it brings up one of two red flags. One, they feel like in this position there will be no chance for them to win a championship, or two, all heck is going on behind the scenes that they don't like, whatever it may be, front office, players, coaches, whoever it is. Again, they may not like them, they may not get along with them, it may be hindering their play, or maybe hindering the way they go along with things. So to me, this is just a head scratcher, and I like to read more about this before I get you depth onto, you know, quote unquote, who to blame, or why things are going the way they're going with this team, and people wanting to go, and you wanting to trade away someone who's been a help to this team since he got here. Again, to me, I don't know what this is meaning. Maybe this is them thinking that they have no shot and they want to start all over, which is really weird and strange to me. Or maybe this, again, this is just something where they think getting rid of, you know, Teague and possibly now agreeing with Horford, if that's the case, on getting them and trying to get different pieces will make them over the hump. You know, it's been, you know, we've seen it in multiple places, whether it's just a head coach change or whether it's really just a one or two player change and you just get over that hump. So maybe that's what they're thinking it could be. But again, I'm with you. It's a head scratcher. I just don't understand the wanting to get rid of these two guys.
Right. And another name that they threw out there, and this is a funny one, that they tried to throw out Korver, and saying that there's a bundle of teams that said they want Korver, but Korver hasn't really had the output that he had last season. But knowing that this guy, once he gets hot, he's in fuego, he's on fire. But they said that the potential of the doggone Warriors may want him because they feel like they need more shooting. Wow. I heard that today. I said, are you serious? I said, the Warriors need more shooting. I laughed so hard. I couldn't breathe. But
yeah,
knowing that that Atlanta trying to dismantle at least the situation with Teague and Korver, the Horford situation was something that they said that he needs to try and leave so he could try and make something happen before his career dwindles away, all in Georgia. They really don't have the expectancy to see something down there as in the NBA contention. So I understand and get that. It's just why is it entertainable to give him that thought? Okay.
If the Warriors need more shooters, then by all means Denver's defense needs more corners and pass rushers.
Right. Don't start. Like that was hilarious. Who else needs to shoot? Wow. Okay. I'm gonna leave that alone. Okay. We're at the tail end of the show. I need a plug, close out anything that you'd like to promote as we shut it down here at the wrap-up.
You know, at Notch on the Box, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Just me and you today, Ty. I didn't hear anyone else before I got in or whatever, but, yeah, it was pretty cool. Me and you got to chat it up about some NBA. It was quite fun. You know, get back in here tomorrow for the sports wrap-up. You know, maybe some interesting trades can go down in the NBA or anything like that. Again, baseball's starting up, so I'm excited for that. And, you know, maybe we'll get into that. I got a couple questions for you and Chandler tomorrow about my Diamondbacks. You know, just there wasn't anything special I needed to bring up today. Just, you know, crossing my mind right now as I'm running this out, thinking about Chandler and what he already said about my team. So hopefully if he comes in tomorrow, I'm getting a conversation with him about that and with you as well. And then it'll be fun. Just before I get out of here, one Sunday down, 29 more to go, Ty, then football's back. So 29 more Sundays, man, and we hang in there. We'll be back to talking that pigskin on Sundays again, and I'll be excited. But other than that, man, it was a great show. Thanks for letting me come on, and catch you tomorrow, man.
And interesting enough, we didn't hear about the back-to-back MVP and number 12 and all that. No. Because that's why I was trying to ask you if you had something to say, because Roger just went through his surgery, and he's saying that he feels great. So I'll save it for the grill. I'll save it for the cookout. See how you feel at the grill. I'll talk about your quarterback tomorrow, your back-to-back MVP and all this other baloney. No, I ain't all the baloney. But, you know, I just had to mess with him. But Roger's in the topic. Roger's in the topic. I just wanted to make sure. That's why I asked them people, Sports City. I tried Sports City. I give him room, man. So, but he didn't want to talk about Aaron. I'll let him save it for the kitchen tomorrow here at the cookout, man. Y'all tune in tomorrow, 7 p.m. Standard, Eastern Standard. Y'all already know how to get in here. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, interviews, the blog, the chef. We are 5,000 away, people. I'm watching this number so closely, it's not even funny. We are 5,000 away from a million, man. So I just can't wait till we get there. I'm happy to see that we got this far, this long. Been doing work for everybody out there. The slogan has been heard for 6-7 years now. Like, y'all know what time it is, man. I feel some type of way, man. So I'm watching this throughout this week. We should hit it this week. We should at least hit it this week, though. But more to come, more to the chefs. I know it's President's Day. Happy President's Day to out there, everybody out there. And I know everybody's enjoying their little vacation day because the grind is tomorrow. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Young people, mouthpiece for hustlers, I'm back, motherfucker.